We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It's an interesting question, though, because the question a couple of weeks ago or at the beginning of this year was, can, you know, Ben Simmons is the guy. If you're going to trade him, you're going to trade him for the other team's version of the guy that just for whatever reason they decided new scenery is what the guy needs. Now you can trade Ben Simmons for, at best, the other guy. And CJ McCollum is the other guy. Now, Simmons next to Dame Lillard. Dame, congratulations, you're the two now. Yeah, that is interesting. It is. I just don't know if CJ McCollum is the reason the Sixers is the answer for the Ben Simmons trade that we're talking about. I don't know if they see the value in that more than see the value of just running it back with Ben learning how to shoot this summer or trying to learn how to shoot.
Yeah, I think that's fair, but let me just to play devil's advocate a little bit. Who was the second best player on the Sixers in the series, would you say?
God, it wasn't Tobias Harris, that's for sure. By the way, he's getting away with the equivalent of NBA murder today, thanks to Ben Simmons.
I agree.
He should.
I was just going to say it's a familiar name, if you will.
Oh, Seth Curry.
Yeah, that's what I would say anyway. He was the second best player for the Sixers in this series, and
hands down.
I mean, isn't CJ McCollum kind of a supercharged Seth Curry a little bit?
Well, keep in mind though that if Ben Simmons was the complete player people thought he was, Seth Curry would see very little time because they wouldn't need to. He got to play and shine because he was the guy who would do the thing that Simmons wouldn't.
Yes, I understand. I'm simply using him as a reference, Ray, because I thought he played quite well alongside Joel Embiid. So having a player like CJ McCollum, who's sort of a supercharged Seth Curry, if you will, might be a nice fit for Philly. I don't know. I think the better point is, does any playoff team believe this version of Ben Simmons makes them better? And I don't see how you could really say yes, because he just showed you, like, he can't do very important playoff things. So you know you're taking on a reclamation project, and in a way it's only so different from when they traded Markelle Fultz a year ago. You know, it's a broken player if you trade him this offseason.
Yeah, I mean it's amazing when you go back and you look at all the things that Brian Colangelo brought in after Sam Hinkie quit.
And whoa.
What?
Quit? That
or fire?
Is that?
Yeah.
Okay. That seems relevant.
I misspoke. I was thinking Sam Hinkie quit, and then I realized, no, I want to say Brian Colangelo, but I didn't finish this. So anyway. And it's been a disaster because while they're a playoff team, the only one of those picks amounted to much of anything. And that includes Simmons, because right now, as good as he can be, he's unusable when games are decided, which makes him essentially a glorified ninth player, because you can't put him on the floor in the fourth quarter.
Right, in the playoffs. And again, he's a broken player. But again, wasn't it you who just brought up how effective he actually was in the regular season? That was Damon then.
It
was Chad Ford via Damon. Chad Ford channeled through our very own Damon Bruce. We got to remember that to an extent too. Like, if to say he's a broken player is to ignore that he could be fixed, and if he is, he could be a superstar. So, you know, he's only 24 years old, man. I wouldn't give up on him if I'm the Sixers. If his value is as low as we are seeming to suggest via this conversation, I don't think I'd even consider trading him.
Right. You're already pot committed to this, and it might not look like a winning hand now, but maybe through a lot of work, some confidence, yada, 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 you get an inside straight when it comes down to the river on Ben Simmons. I'll tell you.
What also,
yes.
Oh, sorry. Just I was going to quickly say it seems important. Did Sam Hinkie even draft Ben Simmons? I believe that was Colangelo.
I believe.
Yeah.
That's
what I said. He was the only one that they picked that's amounted to anything at all. And even at that, he seems pretty shattered right now.
Since we're talking about the Warriors draft with Anthony Slater, we got the draft lottery tomorrow, ping pong balls to determine some very important slices of Warriors' future. What if I told you guys that the process worked?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was hinting at.
Yeah, there are a lot of people. There are a lot of people who just want to say, well, it's always a disaster, and look what it got you. First of all, this is not a total failure. I know today is the wrong day to be selling you this car because everything looks like a failure today for the Sixers. But if you're telling me that winning 50-plus games a year and you make it 3 years to round two, like, wouldn't the Sacramento Kings kill for that? They would. Andy Glockner, who is a guy I follow on Twitter, basically spelled this out saying, you know, it's hard for me to consider the process a failure considering its architect was binned 5 years ago and the two subsequent GMs extracted 4 cents on the dollar from the assets that he compiled. And when you look at it, and don't forget, Elton Brand, was he part of this too at one point?
Elton Brand is there now.
Exactly. So Elton Brand is no daisy when it comes to picking NBA talent. He says, even if you completely waste most of the assets, the Sixers still ended up with a 50-plus win contender. And when you think about what they wasted their picks on, there might never have been a front office who drafted more inability to shoot than the Sixers did with these three all-time top two can't-shoot draft picks. Evan Turner, Markelle Fultz, and Ben Simmons. And don't forget, Jahlil Okafor was in there too. They had premium picks, and they definitely blew it on three of the four. Ben Simmons, the holdout of hope still.
Yeah, but again, most of that was Colangelo. So, like, people get confused because Colangelo interrupted the process.
Right,
and
this is Colangelo screwing up the assets that Hinkie got for him.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. And look, Hinkie also made mistakes because Okafor was him, and that was a failure to understand where the league was moving. But Embiid was him too at a time when a lot of people didn't like that pick, mostly because of injury, which I guess we could split how that went. But also, he drafted Rashawn Holmes. He drafted a guy like KJ McDaniels, who's actually playing not well enough, but playing still. He drafted Jeremy Grant in the second round. Like, he was using his assets relatively well, and who knows what would have happened if he had played it out. Maybe he also drafts Ben Simmons. We have no idea, but, like, the Hinkie was in the middle of accomplishing what he told his bosses he intended to do, and they lost their stomach for it. That's the accurate history of the process.
That is the accurate history of the process, but it also should remind everybody that being a general manager is not just applying sort of strategies in a locked room. It's about delivering to your bosses something that won't make them look ridiculous. And that's where he failed, because in believing in the process the way he did, he excluded all other factors in creating a team. And one of those factors, and it's not an insignificant one, is providing your bosses with something that they don't have to apologize for. And that's what happened.
You know,
because ultimately, if you combine Hinkie and Colangelo and to a certain extent Elton Brand, the process actually didn't work because they're no further along than they were before. And to get there,
right, they were just eliminated. They were in game seven to go to the Eastern Conference Finals. They were at 17 wins a few years ago.
Okay, but let me finish. Right now, they're still a second round and out team with all the assets that were accumulated, you know, albeit most of them by Hinkie. They're still a second round and out team. And when you have that kind of payload, you have to do better. You simply have to. You can't make as many mistakes and as many high-priced mistakes that ended up on other teams as that organization did.
Not only did they screw up some draft picks that Hinkie assembled for them to use in their war chest, can we be completely honest? I got this Tobias Harris trade wrong. Tobias Harris.
Well, the trade was fine. It's effectively choosing Harris over Jimmy Butler that's the problem.
Right. Yes. I mean, that the guy that they could have held on to, the guy that they made the play for. By the way, the pick that they traded, one of them that they traded to the Clippers turned into Sadiq Bey. So, you know, I mean, that could have been a player used, but it's.
Wow.
Yeah, again, I'm being generous.
They probably still could have had him. That's a dad. Who knows?
Yeah, Nerlens Noel is another name that comes up with, you know, just wasted assets. Real quick, Eric and Milbrae, you're on 95.7 The Game. Eric, what do you got?
What's up, guys? I want to hit on two things. First off, I think Ben Simmons is way overhyped, and he's not worth the trade. Honestly, I wouldn't trade Wiggins straight up for him. He might be a more skilled overall talent player. I just don't think he works hard, and he's really an offensive liability, and you can't have one of your ball handler, point guard, quarterback of the team, such a liability that he has to be benched, and he shoots free throws like a 7%, 30% for somebody of his caliber is embarrassing. So I hear all these Warrior fans and other teams who get hyped over Ben Simmons. I just don't think he's that much of a difference maker. And Morey dropped the ball. The time to trade him was you had Harden on the table. He didn't pull the trigger at this point. You know, they're going to want an all-star return. I hear like CJ McCollum. I wouldn't do that if I was Portland. So
I mean, it was Houston that didn't pull the trigger
right.
on that. That was Houston.
No, no.
Yeah. So
also, if I may, Simmons works hard. He doesn't work well, and he hates the ball.
He
That's
also
the
chases
real criticism
Kardashians anywhere he can.
Yeah, I don't think he doesn't work.
Anyway, can't begrudge an NBA player for chasing a Kardashian, I guess. Anyway, we got to take a real quick break, and we're going to come on back with a guy who is never a liability. He is always an asset when it comes to talking about the Warriors, their present and their future.
But has he chased a Kardashian?
Well, let's find out. I'm going to say no on that. Anthony Slater joins us in just a moment here. We're going to give you a chance to chase $1,000 when we return as well. We're brought to you by your Northern California Toyota dealers.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Let's splash the cash. A chance to win $1,000. Text the code word RACE to 72881. RACE to 72881. Brought to you by your local Toyota dealers. Toyota, let's go places. This is a multi-state contest. Message and data rates do apply. Anthony Slater, nice enough to apply for the job of covering the Golden State Warriors. And he covers the rest of the NBA as well. And we get to talk to him here on 95.7 The Game. Always appreciate your time. Anthony Slater, how you doing, pal?
I'm good. I'm in Phoenix. I actually might go out and watch the Arizona Diamondbacks tonight, but I think they've lost 18 in a row.
I mean, they're just giving away tickets at this point. You should be able to walk in there for free and say, you should thank me for being here.
I was just looking at SeatGeek. I won't get in for free, but let me tell you, it's not too much to walk into that building.
There you go. $6 is all the Diamondbacks should be asking anyone.
You could walk in and play shortstop.
Anthony, obviously, you know, the ripple effects of yesterday are being felt far and wide around the NBA. We got plenty of ping pong balls and some Joe Lacob interviews with Tim Kawakami to get into, but we got to start, I think, with Ben Simmons, who is having as bad of a day as any athlete has had a day after a game in a real, real long time. Do you see a solution?
Yeah, trading him this summer, it seems like. I mean, that writing is kind of on the wall. I mean, they could, if Daryl Morey is a guy who usually, you know, he's not really a sell low guy, and you would be selling low on Ben Simmons if you traded him this summer. So maybe there's a thought of bringing it back and trying to make the concoction work again. And if Ben Simmons kind of resuscitates his value a bit, trading him at a time where you're not in the bad position. But I think we've seen it now over the last few years. Him and Embiid don't necessarily work, and it's becoming more obvious. As Embiid has stretched out his game and does shoot mid-range, does shoot the three, does do some more stuff, Ben Simmons, not only does he only live 1 foot from the hoop, but he's not even doing that very well anymore either. I mean, he's just not shooting at all. So I think if there's something on the table that they believe can make them better next season, not just like a, you know, giveaway Ben Simmons trade, I do think they'll pull the trigger this summer.
What exactly, though, is the lure for another team whose first job is to figure out if he's ever going to be willing to shoot the basketball at any point?
The talent, the defensive talent. I mean, he finished second in defensive player of the year. I look at a team like Portland, you know, let's say you flipped him and McCollum. I think that makes Portland more interesting. You talk about Portland has a 29th ranked defense this season. They've always lacked wing size and defensive versatility. They've always kind of lacked an extra passer next to Damian Lillard, who kind of, you know, maybe you set a screen on the short roll. But that's why they've always been obsessed with Draymond Green, essentially. Ben Simmons could be kind of Portland's Draymond Green. Now, what you're saying is right. You have to bring him in and try to fix his offensive game, fix his free throws. And the free throws seem to be seeping in everywhere. When he shoot 32%, I think, from the line in the playoffs, and then kind of start being afraid to get to the line. Now, you ask from Philly's perspective on that, though, you know, is McCollum the right answer for what they're looking for? Do assets have to be attached either way? Those are deeper questions, and we could talk about other guys around the league, but I do think there's still a lure of Ben Simmons, the idea of what he could do to for you defensively, and still kind of as like a large 6'10" passer.
Let's put the Philadelphia failure aside for 1 second. And just in terms of what the Atlanta Hawks are, should we be taking them seriously in this Eastern Conference Finals? Or is this a team that's only here because of the strange flaws and unfortunate injuries to the number one seed?
No, I think we should take them serious because I didn't really take them serious in the last series. And, you know, they kind of ready to take punches and counter punches and come back from 25 down. That was the impressive part. Like, they won game 5 and game 7 in Philadelphia. They came back from 25 down. it felt like Philly was the better. I still kind of think the Sixers are the better team, but Atlanta was kind of just like the tougher, readier team. And, you know, we talk about flaws and even superstar flaws. Like, Milwaukee to me is still beatable, and Giannis is, you can definitely kind of construct defensive game plans that can throw Milwaukee completely off its game. I mean, they were super impressive to take down Brooklyn, but I mean, they took down a very, very injured top seed, essentially. So I don't think – I'm not too impressed by either team. I would favor Milwaukee. I don't think Atlanta really has much of a defensive answer to Giannis, but sure. I mean, if Atlanta's up 2-1 with a game 4 in Atlanta come, you know, next weekend, would any of us be that stunned?
I don't think so. Based on what we've seen, I don't think so. When you got an unafraid star who's a shooter, good things can happen. Look at what happened to the Warriors, obviously. Not that Trae Young and Steph Curry have a straight line between the two, but you know what I mean. Anthony Slater here on 95.7 The Game. So, look, obviously Kevin Durant wanted to get to the NBA Finals. There's no doubt about that. But in an odd and strange way, as we've watched him try to chase whatever is going to make him happy, the fact that there seems to be more house credit earned in a glorious defeat than he had in overwhelming NBA Finals wins with the Warriors, do you think Durant's mind is a little bit more at ease with the unfair criticism he feels that he's gotten in his career and maybe is quieted down this Monday?
I don't know. I'm not. I learned long ago covering Kevin Durant for 7 years not to predict what he's necessarily thinking on any particular day. So I don't know if that's quieted in his mind. But I will say I felt like he was on the path to this in his final playoffs with the Warriors. Remember what he did in that Clippers series, into that Rockets series where he initially hurt the bottom of the calf? We were starting to kind of talk about him as the best player in the world. LeBron had gone to L.A. and they had flamed out that first season. KD had averaged something like 40 in the last four games of that Clippers series. So what's more impressive to me is that he's, you know, doing this off the Achilles. I thought the moment he tore it, like, he'd never get back to where we thought, you know, at the time we thought, even the last Warriors game, I mean, he came in after missing, what, like 6 weeks or something like that, and he had like 11 points before he tore the Achilles. So it's just, I think more than anything, it's cool for him to see, and it's cool for the basketball world to see that, like, he probably has a few more good years of, like, absolute peak prime Kevin Durant. And even early in the season when he kept getting like little injuries, I was doubting we were ever going to see that.
Yeah, and don't you think in a weird way, Anthony, this is good for Klay Thompson to see? Because 48 minutes for KD in Game 5, 40 minutes in Game 6, and then 53 minutes in Game 7. It's 141 minutes over three games. That might be the largest three-game workload the NBA has seen from anyone in several years, much less a guy coming off an Achilles 2 years ago. So I look at that as Klay Thompson should have watched that with maybe more excitement than anybody.
Yeah, and Klay Thompson, you know, when we talked during the season, discussed being encouraged not by what you're talking about with Durant, but just by the fact that, like, on opening night, Kevin Durant had a dunk and, like, looked, oh, wow, he had, like, some explosion off that leg. For KD to complete his season like that is a good sign. But what I would say, Kevin Durant, because of the pandemic, didn't actually return to play, I think, for like, you know, 17, 18 months. Like, that's when he finally made his debut. He probably would have been more ready, but the season got pushed back. Klay, opening night next season, I think it's like 10 and a half months from Klay Thompson's surgery. So if you're looking more towards, like, when might Klay be back to, like, that version of Klay, I think we're talking mid-season to next playoffs is probably on the optimistic side, because you talk to the guys with Achilles and, you know, ACL, which, you know, Klay's also dealing with, although he's nearly 2 years into that. You kind of start to feel more like yourself towards the end of that first season back, sometimes not even until the second season back.
So what you're saying then on Thompson is that you're looking at a guy who's going to miss somewhere between 2.5 and 3 full years of him. How many players in the history of the league have missed that much time and come back and been close to the same guy? Are there comps for him?
I'm trying. I mean, that's a research project right there. Can we think of anybody? I mean, the good signs are like the Dominique Wilkins stories where, you know, this is when medicine wasn't as good and he came back from an Achilles tear. But, yeah, just like, I mean, I can give you a bad tale, which would be DeMarcus Cousins, who I'm watching currently in this Phoenix Clipper series. But when he went Achilles ACL, he did it kind of the flip side of Clay. He has never really looked like himself. I'm watching him run yesterday, and he's still kind of dragging his legs around. Not to make Warriors fans worry enough, but I can't necessarily currently think of somebody who went major injury, and then came back and looked right like themselves.
I just don't know that there's that many examples of people getting hurt in that way. And frankly, DeMarcus was never that spry. as far as the plan for this offseason, because Clay's going to come back eventually and hopefully he'll be good. There's nothing they can really do about that. You have generally been a proponent of adding veterans to the team. I assume you heard what Joe Lacob had to say about a veteran with a big contract. Did that surprise you at all? And I don't know, how did it hit your ears?
Oh, this is what I've always thought they're most likely to do this summer, which is add veterans, but add them with the mid-level, add them on the minimum. Really, what in some ways they tried to do last offseason and struck out when, you know, they went after Gasol, they went after Ibaka, they went after Nicholas Batum. They really thought Nicholas Batum was going to be on this roster and would have really had the Michael Mulder spot because that was going to be the last guy they were going to add. It didn't work out, they think, this summer. Actually, not only do they think this summer that they'll be able to win some of those negotiating battles now that Clay's back and they have a potential path to the title, I think they're committed to no matter what, if they strike out on their number one, like making sure they get a guy who's a bit more proven. Now, if a big swing is available, I do think that they look at the trade market, but when they said they were adding more veterans, you know, even when Bob Myers said it was pressure, I never thought that meant, well, they're definitely, you know, going to add a $25 million per year dude with a trade.
Do you have any names in mind for those mid-level sort of guys?
Yeah, I mean, like, Batum, once again, is a free agent. I don't know if he'll want to go back to the Clippers. He's had a really good season there. I'd like Kelly Olynyk, if he would be willing to sit in that salary range. That's always the question with a lot of these guys. But, Olynyk, they've mentioned the need for a stretch five. I do think you want a shooting center to have next to Draymond Green at times. And Olynyk is tougher than maybe his reputation might suggest, and he's been in those playoff moments. That's something Bob Myers mentioned in his press conference. They want veterans who have played in playoff series, who have proven they can be, you know, winning components. Like Wes Matthews is another name I throw out there. Rudy Gay. They've talked about playmaking point guard. I think Derrick Rose has probably played himself out of that salary slot, but he's a guy I know in the past that they've, you know, at least kicked the tires on. There's really like probably 25 other names, but
No, those are good ones.
Anthony Slater here on 95.7 The Game. So has anything happened to draw Kelly Oubre Jr. closer to returning or further away from returning since the last time we talked to you?
It's probably the same. I would very much predict he isn't back. You already see out there reports of different teams being somewhat interested in him. Not only does that tell you that, you know, he might have somewhat of a market, but I think it also just it's probably from Oubre's side of things, like, you know, trying to drum up interest because he knows he's, you know, probably for sure not coming back to the Warriors on any type of beefy salary or expected to have some role. If Kelly Oubre at the end of the day says, look, you know, I'll come back on a bargain, on a short deal, and I'm willing to come off the bench and basically be a backup power forward, then I think the Warriors would be interested. But nothing about covering Kelly Oubre for a season makes me think he's ready to take either that role or that salary number with the Warriors.
Quickly, do you think there's any chance they'll be able to somehow sign and trade him or something to that effect?
So their hope would be that Kelly Oubre actually does get a payday, on the market in the scenario you're talking about, because the bigger salary number he gets, that means the bigger trade exception the Warriors could get. And it's a pretty easy, no-brainer move for them if the other team's willing, where it's what Boston did with Gordon Hayward. Gordon Hayward agreed to sign with the Hornets. The Celtics were going to lose him, but they called up the Hornets and said, hey, if we give you a future second-round pick, will you just make this a sign-in trade so we can get a full Gordon Hayward size trade exception? And that's what they used to get Evan Fournier at the deadline. So the Warriors would just call whoever's going to sign him, hoping that, you know, Oubre signed a somewhat bigger salary and just say something like, hey, here's a future second-round pick, and they basically have, let's say, a $14 million trade exception, something like that.
So we know that the Warriors are sending Rick Welts to represent them at the lottery, and he has meant very good things for the Warriors. If he comes back with two lottery picks, though, I don't know if he's allowed to retire anymore, and I don't even care where they are. Like, two picks in the lottery for the Warriors will be interesting. I loved your column about how, you know, the Warriors possibly hitting the mega Powerball, the best case scenario of their own pick happening in the top three, and then top three or four, and then Milwaukee's pick also conveying to them, or excuse me, Minnesota's pick conveying to them. The chances are, as you described, minuscule, but are you ready to go to Vegas and just start partying if that indeed does happen?
I would be ready to take Rick Welts to Vegas if that happens. Yeah, like one in 2000, that like the one in four scenario would work its way out. I mean, to me, I'm really looking at the Minnesota pick. Because there's only a 2-point-something% chance that they jump up with their own, but 9% chance Minnesota's the fourth pick, and then it's somewhere in like the 20% range on both, I think, 7 and 8. So, and then a 27% chance they don't have it. And if they don't have it, I think that changes their summer a little bit, and that's if Minnesota jumps into the top three, they wouldn't have it. So that, to me, is the drama of the night, and kind of changes the complexion of the offseason a little bit.
Like you said in your column, if that first envelope opens and the Warriors aren't on it, hide the women and children. It's going to be a party. That's all I'm saying. Thank you very much, Anthony. Always a pleasure talking with you, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Enjoy your night in Phoenix. Don't go to a Diamondbacks game. Ray, nobody on this show, yeah, maybe in America, loves sports misery more than you. And on that note, are you considering Diamondback season tickets? Because that's got to be the most miserable experience in sports.
I don't have to see them to enjoy them. They already have a 17-game losing streak and a 13-game losing streak. They've lost 23 in a row on the road. They've lost 7 in a row at home. They went from being a game and a half out of the wild card race on May 2nd to being 21 and a half out now. And they only play three teams with a losing record between now and the All-Star break. I think Mardi Gras starts on my couch.
Wow. That's bad.
Do you ever listen to the Sirius station on the way home to hear how sad the Diamondbacks broadcasters are?
I have a couple of times. And
I knew it.
I tell you what, though. Like most broadcasters, they try to put a happy face on everything.
Oh,
and
boy.
Right now they're sort of down to a level where they're putting, like, you know, little paper crowns on turds because there's nothing to dress up about this. They've lost in every conceivable way. They've lost, you know, in heartbreaking fashion. They've been run out in the first inning. When you lose 40 out of 45 games, you basically are now repeating yourself because there are no more ways to lose games than that. I mean, conceivably, they could lose on a game-ending triple play like the A's did yesterday. But at this point, you know, all you're doing is repaving a freshly paved road. They've established who they are. They just have to maintain the course.
I can't wait to see our Twitter graphic for the sort of poll quote with Ray Ratto says the Diamondbacks broadcasters at this point are putting little paper hats on turds.
Do you ever see Dinner for Schmucks?
Yes.
It's like Ray's making dioramas of just Diamondbacks pain with little crowns on everyone. Oh, that would be fantastic.
I mean, you'd like to feel awful about it, but that time has passed.
Look at it this way. If you needed Bob Brenly to go to sensitivity training and you thought that was going to be the biggest part of your summer, you had no idea what was coming.
Yeah, I mean, they've lost 30 of 32. Okay, that's a message from God that this is not a team that needs your pity. It needs your enjoyment. In fact, I'll put it another way. The Diamondbacks have played 73 games so far. Ben Simmons shot 73 free throws in the postseason.
Oh.
Ben Simmons made 25. The Diamondbacks have won 20.
I don't know if there's anybody doing that kind of correlation radio. It's why you tune in an afternoon drive here in 95.7 The Game. That was fantastic. Bravo, Ray. Bravo.
Really puts it in perspective.
It really does. I mean, good God. Ben Simmons has got a better chance of hitting a free throw than the Diamondbacks do of winning a baseball game. Oh, that's a scary place to be existing if you're a baseball team. Can we just real quickly talk about how the Giants and Phillies over the weekend, the Giants took 2 out of 3. Just win the series. That's all that matters. That's it. That's all you got to do. Just win the series. They have now won or split 8 straight series in a row. Cueto won on Friday night. We won't even talk about what happened on Saturday. Sammy Long then gets the win on Father's Day as the Giants send the crowd home happy with an 11-2 cakewalk. They've got kind of an easy week, you know, relatively easy to a normal life of a baseball week. They're off today. Giants are off today. They play Tuesday, Wednesday in a series down in Anaheim. Then they're off on Thursday again and then come home to host the A's on Friday, which is going to be the first everyone's allowed back in the ballpark moment down at 24 Willie Mays Plaza. They did get a season-high crowd of 18,265 on Father's Day. Meanwhile, it's all about winning series. If that's the law for one Bay Area first-place team, it's got to be the law for the other, and it is. All the A's need to do is just keeping out, chugging out series wins. Well, for the first time in a really long time, the A's did not pick up a series win. It's the first road loss in a series of the A's entire season, I believe. So it is a tough way to wrap up another Sean Manaea tough luck loss. I don't know if you guys saw, but New York, the Yankees, they turned a triple play to end the game on Sunday in a one-run game, and they had two runners on. Obviously, you can't turn a triple play without two guys being on. And it's the first game-ending triple play in all of baseball since 2009. That's a tough luck way to lose a game. And even though he didn't give up the go-ahead run, that's a tough luck loss for Sean Manaea. It's just a tough luck outing. Manaea was spectacular on Sunday at Yankee Stadium and doesn't have anything to show for it.
When the A's go to New York, bad things tend to happen to them. And I'm not exactly sure why that is, because it happens when they're good and it happens when they're bad. When they're bad, you understand it. But even when they're good, they always find a way to lose the rubber match. And by now, I mean, if anybody was aware of it, it would almost be in their heads the way Ben Simmons is in his own. But you just sort of expect it when they go to New York. They're losing 2 out of 3, and you don't know how they're going to do it, but they're going to do it.
That was mean. You didn't have to take it to a Ben Simmons place on him, for God's sake.
I'm sorry. But today, that's the theme, pal.
Apparently so. New York is a house of horrors. I mean, any A's fan can tell you that. But like you said, Damon, it's the first time in a long time they haven't won a series. They're rolling. This team, and I don't know that yesterday or the weekend overall changes that exactly. And I guess what I would say is if you feel like that does mess you up a bit, don't worry. You're headed a bit to the AL West's version of the Arizona Diamondbacks. So, you know, you got 4 to get right in Texas before you come back to the Bay for the Bay Bridge Series, which ought to be a barn burner.
By the way, one more note. The Yankees, kind of all they do is turn triple plays this year. They have turned 3 triple plays, which ties the record in any major league season. And again, they've done this before the 4th of July. The Yankees also recorded the very first ever 136256 triple play. It sounds like a phone number more than it does how you record outs in a baseball game. But
rundown in there somewhere.
Totally. Yeah. 136256 was the first ever recorded triple play of that nature, and they did it against the Blue Jays on Thursday. And again, they have had 3 triple plays in the span of 31 days, which is one of the only things that has really gone right for the Yankees this summer. The A's do have the stage to themselves tonight. The Giants are dark. The NBA playoffs are dark. I guess Islanders Lightning would be your competing sporting event tonight. By the way, that series is tied at 2. Frankie Montas against Kyle Gibson as the A's take on the Rangers tonight.
And the Rangers,
the
have
West
won...
version of the. Yeah, here you go.
No, yeah, the Rangers have won 3 of their last 22. So they are indeed the Arizona Diamondbacks of the American League.
And on that note, we'll just tell you real quickly, we're coming on back for our longest commercial-free segment of the entire day. And you're not going to believe it. We have found the one thing that Democrats and Republicans can agree on. And that's that the NCAA is a joke. We're going to come on back and talk about that in just a moment. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Again, we've talked an awful lot of Howard Beck and Anthony Slater, an awful lot of NBA today, a couple of great NBA guests, and there is a little news that I guess Brian Windhorst said that one of the things maybe they are considering this offseason for Ben Simmons is a change in shooting hands, which you were talking about a couple days ago, Matt, so who knows?
Listen to what Doc Rivers said. Hold on, before we move on, I think this is important. Did you actually like read the quote that Doc Rivers said today, you guys? Because this is Doc Rivers, quote, "I believe, without going into detail with what we're doing, I believe we know what the right work is and the right type of work and the right way to do it. You can do the work all the time, but if it's not done in the right way and the right type of work, you may not improve. After being here for a year, I really do believe we've identified what and how, and now we have to do the do part."
So he used the word right.
I think he's
right.
Talking about... Yes.
He used the word right.
I think
right.
He's talking about switching hands.
More time than left. Yeah, no, maybe it is. Maybe there's a little clue to be found in the answer. He says the word right 6 times. So who knows? Who knows? It is something.
And like the right type of work, like it's a weird way to describe, like he's clearly alluding to an elaborate process, right?
But if he said we're going to try to do the left kind of work, he'd sound like an idiot.
He would. Well, here's
no
the one thing.
I'm not saying that, right?
No.
I understand that.
Here's the deal. That was a joke. Doc Rivers should send Ben Simmons a muffin basket because that guy didn't coach a lick through that moment. He could have benched a player he knew was ineffective. He didn't. And then wants to say, well, the reason why we lost is what? The guy that you left in the entire fourth quarter, 4 games in a row, who was afraid to shoot? Like, Doc will throw just about anybody under the bus to make sure he doesn't find himself underneath there. I thought he threw Simmons under the bus, but we've done an awful lot of that. I want to get into 2 notes from the world of sports law. Sports law is a really big umbrella. The amount of things that fit underneath it are plentiful. But we do have quite a decision rendered today that isn't nearly as dramatic as the headlines you might have read about it and some of the quotes you've seen attributed to it. But law is always about establishing precedent. And the precedent established today by a Supreme Court ruling is something that the NCAA is going to lose sleep over. So basically,
not just sleep.
Yeah, sleep and a lot of cash. And it's a very, very interesting day for the NCAA, to say the least, because Sportico has a column saying that in one of the most significant sports law decisions in U.S. history, the Supreme Court ruled unanimously today against the NCAA. Now, those who want to tell you that amateurism died this afternoon are exaggerating. That is not what happened. Today, basically, the NCAA said that more than 1,200 member schools are in violation of the Sherman Act by limiting how much each can compensate athletes for academic-related costs. This is the reimbursement of semester overseas to computers to all sorts of little on the look at it this way. If amateurism is the cake, today the only thing that was addressed was the frosting. But the assault on the cake could come through how the frosting issue was addressed. Democrats and Republicans find the one thing they can actually agree on. Tribal politics has extended all the way to the Supreme Court. And this was a unanimous 9-0 decision where you had Neil Gorsuch, who authored the opinion, with Brett Kavanaugh authoring a concurring opinion, because again, there was no dissenting opinion to be offered. It was a unanimous vote. And some of the language used by Kavanaugh is essentially him telling the NCAA that your time on selling amateurism to screw over kids is going to be reaching an end soon. One of his quotes was, "The schools are conspiring with competitors to pay no salaries to the workers who are making schools billions of dollars on the theory that consumers want the schools to pay their workers nothing." Andrew Brandt, who's a very savvy sports business guy, said that Justice Kavanaugh indeed sounded ominous when he said, quote, "Under the rule of reason, the NCAA must supply a legally valid pro-competitive justification for its remaining compensation rules. As I see it, however, the NCAA may lack such justification," which is the legal equivalent of, you guys are lying, we know it.
That's a ruling that, I mean, the fact that it's unanimous strikes me as interesting because this is the one touchstone on which all members of the court can agree, because the people in the Southeast and the Midwest want the NC2A to be struck down for completely different reasons than everybody else wants to. But it is the NC2A's, you know, it is the touchstone of their reign that they've managed to piss off everybody. That's the most amazing thing about this ruling. It's not that the court is now profoundly skeptical about their abilities to do the right thing. It's that everybody agrees that whatever the right thing is, the NC2A can't do it. And to get right-wingers and left-wingers to agree on anything is an amazing accomplishment for the NC2A, because they've managed to be hated by people who hate each other. Hats off to them. Well done, fellas.
Could you give me that first sentence again about, you know, conspiring?
The schools are conspiring with competitors to pay no salaries to workers who are making the school billions of dollars. And by the way, billions of dollars was italicized in the official statement. On the theory that consumers want schools to pay their workers nothing. In other words, yeah, they're saying that the appeal of our product is not game day, is not homecoming.
Yeah.
It's that we're screwing over the players.
That's right. And I've, you know, I've credit to Kavanaugh in this one particular case. I've never heard it quite put that way. And it is both an incredibly accurate and incredibly damning statement about exactly what is happening here. That's the lie that they've really been trying to sell this whole time, is that for some reason people only like it because we're screwing over kids. Which, boy, is that a problem if that's true. Like, boy, do we have some real reckoning to do as a nation of sports fans if it's really just that you like to watch kids get screwed over. Because to me, even the most vocal proponents of not paying kids are not doing it because they love watching kids get screwed over, you know, like that. But it's true. That's what they're trying to say, is that, oh, well, we can't do this if we pay the kids. And there's no way they could say that about the billions of dollars. Clearly, there's enough money to pay the kids. They're actually trying to argue people only enjoy it because we don't pay these kids, which is one of the most ridiculous things you could suggest in the entire world.
The one thing that we can all agree on, and again, we live in a world where we can't agree all on anything, but I think the one thing that we agree on is that every single kid playing for a college team should be enrolled as a student that is meeting a bare minimum of academic standards to remain on scholarship. But beyond that, that doesn't mean, oh, and then you don't have to pay the kid. Because this is so changed and metamorphosed itself from, you know, well, that day, 11 kids from Yale beat 11 kids from Harvard in grainy black and white footage as they wore leather helmets and entertained a crowd of 18,000 people. It's so much different now. It's so much different now. Let me real quickly, because we got a lot to get into here, and I don't want to be interrupted by a top-of-the-hour rejoiner. Let's do it right now, if you will, Grandy Maldonado. Welcome, everybody, to 5 o'clock.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.